Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 3, Season 7. Bit of a different Absolute Rally this. We've got a little bit of cookery going on in the background, which is obviously what every rally podcast needs. Normally at this point of the podcast, I always say, hello Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How
and
are
I'll
you?
Say, I'm all right. You don't normally ask. Thank you. I'm flattered. I'm really, really good. Thank you very much. And I'll say hello, Ryan Champion.
Mixing it up.
Thanks, mate. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Jack Bennion and Tony Simpson. How are you both?
We're all the better for speaking to you. Now, at the moment, there's some culinary delights being produced in the background of where you're recording from today, isn't there, Ryan Champion?
There is, you know, a talented young chef. From Manchester, by the name of Chris Ingram.
I've heard him called some things, but never that.
He's currently asking Mr. Austin Price for advice on fish fingers and chips. We'll come to the pair of them in a little while.
Yeah, we're going to talk to them a little while. This is going to be brilliant. This is going to be brilliant. Right, listen, without further ado, boys, we do need to crack on, and we're going to crack on straight away. We're not playing games. We're going to go straight in. Page 12, Jack. It's a story that's been buzzing around for quite some time. I think we've all got an opinion on this, but I feel we need to deal with it here and now. Ford eyeing a world championship return. I'll come to you first, Jack Bennion.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a furthering of what you heard at the end of Monte Carlo. Obviously, nice to hear someone from Ford confirming involvement in M Sport, and they want to move forward and continue working with M Sport and putting some input in. So, you know, hopefully that's going to eventually turn into Ford coming back into the WRC full time. But at the minute, it seems like a situation where Ford are getting everything they need. That, you know, they've got the badge on the car, and M Sport have got a technical deal with them. And, you know, when they're seen to be winning it, the badge on the front is a Ford, isn't it? So it looks like Ford that's winning the rallies, and they get everything they need out of it at the minute, don't they, Ford? So it's, you know, M Sport have got to find a way to persuade them into it, haven't they?
I was just about, Jack's kind of stole me thunder there, right? I was just going to come to you that, really. Do either party really need this to happen other than the financials here?
I think there's mutual benefits. I mean, firstly, I'm sure M Sport would like to be entered under the Ford banner and be an official team in the WRC again. You know, it adds kudos to both the championship and their activities. And from Ford's point of view, you know, the cars are already competing. The budget's already there to have the cars competing. Surely, you know, a little bit of extra marketing budget could really help promote the Ford activities and make the most of the cars competing. They've got a four-time world champion driving for the team. So, you know, isn't that something Ford should be jumping up and down and really shouting about?
I guess so. I just feel, in some ways, to me, and this is purely my opinion, I think M Sport is almost as strong as what it's ever been now. I don't know about you, Jack, but, you know, we're seeing, obviously, they've got three cars out on WRC. Obviously, they've got Seb with the Red Bull Association, everything else, which I'm going to talk to you about in a second. And then, you know, we're hearing, you know, rumours about a possible two-car BRC team and things like that. You know, I don't remember M Sport being this strong for quite some time.
No, I think, you know, outwardly, you know, it looks like they are doing very well, doesn't it? I would say that I think they're probably quite stretched at the minute in terms of everything they've got there that they're involved in with all the investment that's going on at the Dovenby site. But you know, they're selling cars. Look at how many R5s. Over 200 R5s sold now.
Jack, unfortunately, you're starting to go like a Dalek.
The customer side of things is, well, that's in the offer. I've not moved. I've not moved anywhere.
Yeah, you've gone very Dalek-esque on us, so just be aware of that, by the way. But right, just again, just kind of same point to you with what I've just put to Jack there. I don't remember M Sport even in the, I suppose you call it the heyday of McRae and science. You know, that was very much, obviously, a focused, you know, works team, if you like. This diversity where they've gone into, obviously, with racing programs, obviously, developing the R5 program and stuff like that. Obviously, back in the day, it was very much a World Rally car, and that was it, and that was when they were a works team. This has kind of made them go into other areas, and they've really, really seemed to have been doing very, very well as a business as a whole.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, as a business, it's very, very successful. I mean, you just have to look at the amount of sales of R5 cars, of R2 cars, and ultimately that's what's paying for the World Rally team at the minute. So phenomenally successful, diversified, as you said, into GT3 with Bentley. And it is a very, very successful company. But, I still think that their headline program, the WRC program, they would still love to have that back in a Ford and obviously bring that extra money with them, because they are competitive. They've won in Monte Carlo, but, I'm sure that they're still competing on a budget that's substantially less than their competitors. And, they would welcome some more funding. And I really do think it could work for both Ford and M Sport.
Let's keep Everton crossed. Jack, we're going to go to the next story. It's a story which probably started last year and it's kind of haunting us a little bit this year. Will there or will there not be enough snow in Sweden?
It's a good question, isn't it? It depends who you speak to. I've heard a lot of different sort of rumours about what's going on in Sweden, and obviously we write MN quite a bit earlier than obviously when the event's starting and stuff, so I think the next couple of days will be key to work.
I think
exactly how snowy the event's going to be, but we have moved a little bit further north, so that's definitely a good thing, and move forward.
Absolutely right. Obviously you're playing in the white snuff at the moment. We're going to talk to the boys a bit later on. We know M Sport have been tested, not a million miles away from you guys, I don't think, where you are at the moment. What's it like over there? How far away are you from where the event's going to take place?
Well, actually, quite a long way north of of the Karlstad Torsby area that Rally Sweden takes place in. But it's been a relatively mild winter so far in Sweden. We haven't got a huge amount of snow. There is some snow, but certainly not a huge amount. The snow banks that were here earlier in the winter have gone. So, I think for the rally, there will be snow covering. I think it will be a good winter rally, but there certainly won't be the big snow banks that we've seen in previous years. But where we are currently, it's minus 15 and it's nice winter conditions.
Coming to Sweden, a friend of the show and birthday boy last week, Craig Breen, finally makes his debut in the C3 Wheel Rally Car. He's mega excited, as Craig always is, and some nice quotes, Jack, in the paper as well from him.
Yeah, it's good to see him finally in the 2017 car, isn't it? And on a venue like we alluded to last week, is a good one for him. He's always done well in Sweden, and in the WRC car he's always been quite impressive. It's a challenge, and it'd be interesting to see how he gets on against Chris and why the two stack up in the same car in 2017.
Apologies for the poor reception from Jack Benyon. We'll see whether we can do something there, but Ryan, just come to you on this. Craig, obviously talking about this is the moment he's been waiting for all his life. I think Craig is kind of, I'm not just saying this, but Craig is kind of an outsider. And what I mean is by that, there's obviously pressure on Chris. There were some images that went around on social media from a test the other day. It was undecided who was driving that car, but I think it's been pretty much confirmed now by Chris himself. It was Chris who had the minor off, shall we say, in the test car for the Swedish test. Could Chris already be feeling the pressure of being this lead number one driver?
It's funny, we had a similar discussion here today on that exact subject, and unfortunately, by the very nature of Chris's difficult Monte Carlo, the build-up to Sweden, I'm sure he does feel a little bit under pressure. I hope he has a great Swedish rally, but he performed there well last year. The pace was good. I think despite the Monte Carlo problems, we still expect the car to be good. So, I think he'll have let's hope he has a good weekend, because otherwise the pressure really will be on. I mean, I'm sure at the minute he's just desperate to get going in Sweden and he's desperate for a good run. And, the unfortunate thing is, as we saw with Ogier pre-Monte Carlo, that any incident that somebody has now is well publicised, and it's not something we should dwell on. He went off in testing, move on. He'll hopefully put that out of his mind, and he'll have a strong performance in Sweden. But talking of Craig Breen, as you just mentioned, I mean, Craig in some ways doesn't have any pressure on his shoulders. We saw him build his speed through last year, showed great talent, great speed last year, and he comes into this rally with a fabulous opportunity and maybe without the pressure to perform, and that's got to be a good way to come into it. So, I think we'll see some great speed from Craig through the weekend as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jack, if I can just bring you back in, as I say, unfortunately, your reception has been a little bit dodgy, unfortunately. but this is a great story, which is, you know, everybody seems to have an opinion on a story of what was going to happen with the old VW cars and everything. But there's a great story you guys have ran here. Prokhorov was close to a VW Ogier deal, which would have been a three-car team, including Mads Osberg as well.
Yeah, some really brilliant stuff by David Evans, as usual, uncovering a fantastic story. And it looks like, you know, the plan for this year would be that Prokhorov would run three VWs with Osberg and Ogier as well. So it would have been fantastic to see how those cars had gone, wouldn't it, in this year. But, you know, unfortunately, the FIA have confirmed now that they're not going to be allowed to be homologated for this year. So we're not going to see the Polos out this year, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm not sure that would have been a good follow-up team compared to what they had before. You know, Mikkelsen, Latvala and Ogier, I think, probably would have been the stronger driver lineup for them. But still would have been interesting to see how, you know, the full-time champion got on in a 2017 Polo, wouldn't it?
It would have been. Right, Jack lambasted me last week, but I can say now that a friend of a friend who was with Andreas on Monte Carlo, Andreas confirmed to him that he was going to be driving a 2017 Polo on at least five rounds of WRC this year. Obviously, that opportunity is now gone for him. You wonder where Andreas is going to go next.
Yeah, you do, and he's got to be desperate to get his hands on a World Rally car again this year. As we know, in any driver's career, to miss a year is a hard thing to do. If you're doing it as Ogier did, for example, or Chris Meek did, with a long-term view, with a contract in your pocket, it's a lot easier to take. But in Andreas's position, he hasn't got anything in place for next year, and I'm sure he'll want to try and get back out and, you know, and just remind everybody he's there in order to try and put something into place for next year. But it is a difficult position for him to find himself in, particularly when he convincingly won the final round of the World Championship last year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. A couple of things I want to crack on with before we lose Jack, because we've only got Jack for a short period today. Now, we spoke about him again last week. Ryu went with us last week, Jack, Kyle Rovanperä again comes back into our podcast, and he's set to compete in the Finnish Championship this year. And realistically, he is his first proper WRC round could be Wales Rally GB this year.
Yeah, well, he's been given special permission to compete by the Finnish authorities. So, you know, we're going to see him in the Finnish Championship, and he'll be the youngest driver ever to compete in the Finnish Rally Championship, which is a cool honor. Obviously, with the way his birthday works, you know, he's gonna turn of age, ready to do GB. So, if that's keen to do it, whether they actually decide to do GB is a different kettle of fish, and I think they'll make that decision sort of closer to the time, depending on how Cali's got on this year. Obviously, it's a big deal doing GB as your first major international event, isn't it, as an adult? So, I think they'll probably make a decision on that closer to the time. But, you know, it's going to be good to see him, how he gets on in the Finnish Championship. We've already seen him go up against Pontus Tiedemann and people like that this year and beat them. So it's going to be great to see his progress through the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I don't think it's one. I don't know. I completely take on board what Jack's just been saying, albeit like a Dalek at times. But would you throw the kid in his first WRC event on a GB?
Well, he's not short on experience, is he? Put it that way.
No.
Is the honest answer. If he wants to compete at world level in the future, put him in and see how he does. I mean, he's going to have time on his side. It's not going to be his last chance to prove himself. So, you know, is there anything to lose by putting him out there? Probably not. You know, he's certainly going to have the experience, and it'd be fascinating to see how he did get on with true opposition around him, as it were.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now we're going to crack on, boys, again, because time waits for no one, does it, Jack?
Exterminate.
There you go. That was clear as a bell. All the irony. Great story here. We've made some reference, obviously, a little bit early on with regards to M Sport and M Sport again. Being linked to having at least one, maybe two cars running the BRC with a former champion in Keith Cronin.
Yeah, good news for the BRC, I think. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they get on with the works team. I've heard mixed reviews so far as to what people think about a manufacturer like M Sport coming in with a works entry into a national championship. Obviously, it could go one or two ways. They could dominate, or they could bring something extra to the championship that it hasn't got at the minute. I think the latter is probably the one for me. I'm not sure Keith will come in and dominate. I think he might take a few rounds just to get up to scratch again. You know, we saw him come back into the championship last year. He did the first round in 2 years that he'd done on gravel, so he was taking a little while to settle in there in mid Wales, and on the gravel rounds he's going to take a little bit of time to settle in, I think. So it's going to be really,
yeah, I think so,
interesting. John Gibbs is on, he's running on D-Max, so we'll be running on D-Max, so yeah, it's going to be good to see how he gets on, and good to see M-Sport supporting the championship.
Absolutely right. We always have that fear, I guess, when we've had drivers, I suppose, like Keith. Keith's very unassuming character, I think it's fair to say. He's not one for social media and things like that. He's always quietly gone about his business. Obviously, 3 times British Rally Champion. He had, I think, the odd couple of works outings. I seem to remember in a Proton Super 2000. Then he tried to go, obviously, WRC2. It never quite happened for him. And you kind of felt maybe this is where he kind of disappears a little bit off the radar. He's come back, and he's come back with a vengeance here. This could be a very, very serious deal for him, couldn't it, if it comes off?
It's certainly going to be a serious deal, and he will be reckoned within the British Championship. He's always been quick, but he's, as you've just said, he's shown fantastic speed, showed some career momentum, and then for one reason or another it's petered out a couple of times, and now he's back again. Certainly a very fast driver on both gravel and tarmac, and good to see him back in the British Championship. And hopefully we'll see a few good rivals for him to take the fight to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, guys, this is where, unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to Jack Benny. He has a train to catch, he has a social life, and he has a quiff to look after. So we're going to let Jack go now and go and catch his train and go wherever he's going to go. Where do you go, Jack?
Not anywhere as exciting as Ryan Champion, that's for sure.
No, no one ever does, unless your name's Oshan Price and Chris Ingram, of course, because they're his wingmen at the moment. What a frightening image that is. Some may call it grooming. Anyway, moving on. Jack Benyon, we're not going to do any other business for you this week. We're going to give you this week off, so you're going to have a scorching one next week. You're going to have a scorching one next week. Fantastic. Just before you go, by the way, great piece in this week's MN. Check it out with regards to the opening round of BTR, the A series over in the UK. A cracking event, Cambrian. It's gone through turmoil over the past couple of weeks. Was it going to run? Was it not going to run? Was it going to run? It is going to run. 3 stages repeated. It's going to be tough for the guys at the back. I wish them the very, very best of luck. And even the boys at the front trying to get some match fitness in time for the opening round of BRC. And yeah, so Jack, same time, same place next week?
Absolutely, see you there.
You will see us there. Folks, we're going to go to a little break. Then Ryan and myself are going to come back with his wingmen for this week in Sweden, which has been Oshan Price and Chris Ingram.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, second part of the programme. And we've lost Jack Benny now. He's gone to get his hair cut or get his quiff sorted. I don't know what he's doing. He's out somewhere interesting tonight. He'll be down London's West End just flaunting himself. Anyway, we've still got Ryan Champion, and we've also still got Oshan Price, and we've also got Chris Ingram having his tea, because that's what happens in our podcast. What was for tea?
Fish and chips with beans.
Fish and chips and beans. See, that's the diet of champions, folks. If you're wondering, if you want a little insight there, you know, there's a European two-wheels drive champion there. That's what he eats. Just in case you're wondering what a champion eats. All these people who go on about diets and everything else, got it all wrong. Fish fingers, that's what you want. Anyway, as I say, we are back with the boys. The boys are over in Sweden, by the way, and they're working with Ryan Champion. Ryan is technically grooming them. Take from that what you will. They're working for Tuttles with the Porsches. And boys, I'll come to you first, Chris. Are you having fun playing in rear-wheel drive on the ice?
Yeah, it's awesome. Really good experience. And Ryan's just got here the other day, so going to be good crack.
It's going to be a good crack. Oshan, are you having fun out there, my mate?
Yeah, it's good. It's actually quite interesting to sit right next to me in the car and just see how far off the track you can get, really.
Not exactly when the passenger seat, I might point out.
Boom, deal with that. It's a heckle straight away. I love it. Now, I'm going to ask you, right, apart from the fun element, and obviously I know you're working with customers and you know, some of which we're not allowed to know and some of which we aren't allowed to know. Chris, I'll ask you first. Obviously, all your rally career, it's been front wheel drive. I know Ashton says, but I'm going to ask you first. Do you find anything relevant in what you're doing over there to what you're doing in a rally car?
Yeah, but bits of everything, really. Obviously, not the balance of the car, but everything else, like braking and lines and, yeah, everything. It's really good seat time and sharpening me up as well when I get the chance to drive.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. So I was thinking about this before, because obviously, you know, a 911, Rye's got a little bit of history with these things, but Ocean, you know, they're a bit of a unique beast, aren't they? You know, rear wheel drive, rear engine, probably nothing like you've ever probably experienced before in a strange way.
Yeah, I've only driven an Opel Manta, which is a bit similar, but they're just really good fun, and it's you can learn a lot, you know, about the weight transfer and braking, everything. So great learning.
I like the fact that Chris answered for Ocean as well there. That was really, really important.
Go on, Osh.
Yeah, Osh, how are you finding? Are you finding the same things as Chris, or have you picked up something new? Is it what you were expecting, really, I guess?
Well, yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to, because everything about the car is kind of it's kind of backwards, if you know what I mean. The engine in the wrong place, as it were, and yeah, completely unnatural sort of driving style to what you're used to. But like Chris said, you know, there's so much you can take away from it, and it's vital seat time. You know, we're driving here every day at some point. It might not be a massive amount, but it's just a great feeling. You're driving to work in an old 911, and yes, it's a great buzz.
Fantastic. Who out of the three you got a text message then?
That was actually an email arriving on my...
Well, there you go. But this is one thing I want to ask the two lads first, right, before I bring you back in. We're going to be doing a bit of a piece a little bit further down the line, but as you two guys are there, it's quite a good time to ask you this question, and bear in mind what you're doing as well. And I'll come to you first, Chris. I'm going to be doing a program of kind of nature versus nurture. And what I mean is by this is how much driver coaching drivers get. You know, most other sports, you know, a golfer will have a swing coach, and you know, a footballer, of course, will have a technical coach or a fitness coach and stuff like that. When you were coming through, Chris, and obviously you know, with all your success, you're still learning, you're still going through. How much driver coaching did you get, and are you still getting?
Not a lot, to be honest. I've had the odd day with the odd top driver, like I had a day with Mark Higgins, and I've done a bit with a Formula One driver coach called Rob Wilson, which has been interesting, but I'd like to have a mentor, really, someone who can give me a bit more, but it's quite hard to get someone on board that's keen to help, because everyone's got their own secrets, haven't they?
Yeah, I guess they have, and I suppose it comes down to, as well as, you know, it's... I think people have still got that aspiration themselves. I guess what you need is someone perhaps who's perhaps now accepted that the career is over, Ryan, and, you know, maybe go down that route. Osh, I'll come to you next. With regards to driver coaching and things like that, obviously that's what you guys are doing out there. But as you've been coming through, have you worked with many people?
Same situation as Chris, really. I've done very little, but I was quite lucky a few years ago to have Thierry Neuville do a day with me. He didn't directly sit in the car with me, in case, obviously, if I was to kill him, he would obviously lose his Citroën contract. So at the time,
that kind of goes without saying when someone's dead.
So he was only allowed to instruct me from either outside the car or the driving seat himself. So other than that, really, there's been the odd day here and there. And like Chris, with the MSA Academy, we've been involved with Rob Wilson, which has been great to take a few things away. But obviously, rallying has its own sort of discipline. And it's been very little, and you kind of pick things, and it's a sort of trial and error process, I find, anyway.
Is there being, and I'm going to stick with you, Osh, just for now, just with regards to the progression of your career. I've known you for a long time, so I've known Chris for a long time. You know, you went over to Latvia and kind of worked your way up over there, and was it a year you did over in Latvia?
Yeah, it was a full year back in 2009, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and then you came over and then did the Fiesta STs, and then you went from the Fiesta ST, you went into an R2 Fiesta, and you kind of worked your way up through that way. So you kind of went through that whole front-wheel drive experience. Did you have a clear ladder in your mind of box ticking as you were working your way up to where you are today, or was it just... Well, it's the natural progression. You know, we go from an ST to an R2, and then R2, of course, the British Rally Championship went down the front-wheel drive route, so the best car you could get was a DS3. Were you just kind of guided that way, or did you have a very clear path?
To be honest, there was no sort of path in my early career. It was all about kind of... I'd always wanted to have a go at rallying, and it was all about the fun and just getting into the sport as cheaply as we could, you know. It was all funded by family and whatever we could raise locally. So... there was no path in my early days. It's just when I sort of started to get the buzz and actually starting to put the results in that a path came along, and we sort of set some goals, starting basically with in 2011 with the R2 car, to have a 2-year program in the BRC, and we kind of won the Fiesta Trophy in 2011, and that kind of left us, you know, we'd achieved something a year earlier than we planned. So from then on, we sort of had a key sort of plan to progress, and that came in the shape of the DS3, and it just went on from there, really. And yeah, when things go to WRC level, it kind of gets really serious then, and you have to look at it from a different aspect.
Absolutely. Chris, you kind of went in a slightly different direction, didn't you? Because you went kind of straight from your junior car, and, you know, very quickly you were in an R2 car, and then obviously you did your year in BRC, and then you very quickly went ERC, and you've kind of, you know, you're in a very similar kind of timeline, I guess, in your careers, but you went in a slightly different way. Were you conscious of what you were doing, or again, was it just happened almost by accident?
Yeah, quite conscious, really. Like, there wasn't much to offer in the UK at the time, so I was trying to win prizes all the time, and they were always in Europe, so that's how that happened. And then doing ERC, that led to getting back by Peugeot UK after some good results in my own Twingo R2, which I had. And then it sort of headed in that direction, which is, like, no one else has sort of done that route, so... But it definitely seemed to work out.
So, would you agree, boys? I'm going somewhere with this. Do you agree with the R formula? The way the R formula has gone: R1, R2, R3, R4, R5. Do you think that gave a significant career kind of ladder for Chris for people to aim for, or do you not think it really matters too much with regards to classes? It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think definitely. But I think R3 is a bit of a waste of time now.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was going to come to Osh about that now, is because Osh, you spent quite a bit of time obviously in the DS3, and you did the Junior World Rally Championship as well, and like everybody, you know, a very expensive experience to run a DS3 at Max in that particular environment. It's a very expensive car now, and there's kind of nowhere for it to go, is there?
No, you're right. As Chris said, it's kind of a class where it's not really been excelled at all, really, in the UK at the minute. And it's a big shame, because these cars are pretty quick, you know. They are expensive to run and that, but for the power and the performance you get, it's a fantastic piece of kit, really. And like, going back sort of to the R formula, there's pros and cons, really. It's sort of the expense side of it. It kind of does close in a certain things. You can't do this to the car. You have to obviously abide by the homologation. But yeah, in terms of a career sort of structure, I think it works, and it's obviously paid off for both myself and Chris.
Absolutely. Now, where I was going to with this, boys, we spoke about this last week. I'm going to bring you in now, Rai, because I think this is right up your street. We couldn't get to a definitive answer on this, but the FIA has brought in, and we spoke quite a lot. We've had Hayden Padden on, of course, and we've talked about AP, you know, the AP4 category over in New Zealand, and the Asia Pacific series, which is embracing this AP4 category, and they're doing something very similar in the Australian Rally Championship, and almost kind of left field from nowhere, there was an announcement that Orica have got the contract to supply an R4 kit. Now, I've looked at this. I can't see how possibly anything's going to happen in 2017 with it, I think, as Jack said last week. We're going to be looking at 2018. Right. I don't see how this is going to get any serious uptake.
It depends on cost, doesn't it? And that's the ultimate, I guess that's the ultimate decider on whether it will get any uptake or not. If, and I do say if in inverted commas, costs are carefully controlled with it, I can see how it would work. We're already seeing the AP4 rules, as you said, in Australia and New Zealand, working quite nicely in that category of car. You know, that we talked about the cost of R5. R5 is very costly. But
sorry to interrupt you there, but I agree with you 100%. Right. But an AP4 car, a new AP4 car, is probably going to be the cost of maybe a 12-month-old R5 car.
Yeah, but that's what it is. So to let me finish, which you didn't, you know.
Dude. Sorry, mate. Sorry. You can tell you've had a beer. It's all right. Go on.
What I'm saying is it depends on cost, because the and we're not going to go down that route again, but the ultimate cost-effective rally car was a Group N car previously. There's never been a replacement, or there isn't currently a replacement for that Group N formula, you know, the relatively low-cost four-wheel drive car. If you could control cost, then there's definitely a place for it, you know, stepping stone through four-wheel drive cars that could maybe be more cost-effective to run rather than a £180,000 R5 car. But as you've said, if the car gets to £140,000-£150,000, then it's absolutely pointless. So if it could come in at sub £100,000, there's definitely a market for it. Will that happen? Probably not. I can understand how it could work, but whether the reality of the costs actually work out like that, I'd be doubtful.
I don't think the numbers are going to work for it. I completely agree with you, but I think the car needs to be less than 100 grand, and it's never going to be less than 100 grand. And that's wherein lies the problem. So I'm going to come to you first, Chris, on this, and then I'm going to come to you, Osh. Do you see, as you know, you're still working up, you're still working your career. Would you take it? I know that, of course, you're going to take it, but would you take an R4 drive, or would you pursue an R4 drive when the budget difference between that and an R5 is possibly not going to be a million miles apart?
No chance, to be honest, because you're not going to win a BRC or ERC, are you, in one?
Okay, Osh?
Yeah, it's a sort of in between stepping stone, really. If it costs a small sort of amount more to be up with the, you know, the front field and you know, winning rallies, then you'd probably try and either raise enough money to do it properly or not do it at all. I mean, it's kind of a strange class to be in, and it's my sort of thing of an R4 car was like a Group N Plus, which kind of worked for a lot of people, really. People coming in with already having successful Group N cars, it was, as Ryan said, cost effective, and to sort of just modify them a bit would work. But I'm not kind of sure where this is going to lead to, and as you say, Tony, how many people are going to take up on it?
I just think that, you know, and the reason why I wanted to ask you boys when we had you on is that you guys are fighting to create a career at the moment and working. You've got a career, but obviously you want to progress in your career. And if that's your outlook on it and you're trying to progress, then we're also then looking, okay, well, who's going to afford it? And then you're perhaps looking, dare I say, at, you know, your gentleman guy drivers who go and do WRC. I'm not going to name names, but there's people who go and do WRC because they can raise budget, whether it's personal budgets or business or whatever it may be, and they'll go and take an R5 car. I'm struggling to see the home for it unless it's a very, very cheap car and it almost makes it a no-brainer. Now, right, the argument that could be put to this, and again, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with both sides here, is the way the AP4 car has been developed over in Asia Pacific, obviously it brought manufacturers in, perhaps over there, that would not have gone rallying before. And this kit is supposedly open to any manufacturer that wants to produce a car for regional championships or World Rally Championship events. So is it a good thing? Because, you know, is it somebody going to go to Kia as an example and say, right, okay, well, we're going to build an R4 car in a Kia shell, whatever the Kia shell would, you know, relevant Kia shell would be, and that gets Kia involved? Or does it really not really matter because we're back in the realms of silhouette racing?
I mean, if you can involve manufacturers that aren't going to go to the cost of developing an R5 car, then that's obviously great news, because any manufacturer involvement is a good thing. And if that means that they're going to support a program that wouldn't have otherwise been there, then that has to be great news. But like we've just talked about, it's all about the cost of the car. If it's a car that can replace that Group N category, then it's worth doing. But if it becomes so close to an R5 car that the cost difference is only minimal, then absolutely it's not going to work. But if, you know, if it allows other manufacturers to come in, as you said, the idea is that you can take any car, like they are with the AP4 cars, you can take any car, you can use this kit, you can build a car. A little bit like the British Touring Car Championship. If you look at the regulations in the British Touring Car Championship, that's exactly what they do. You buy a kit of parts, and you can build effectively any silhouette, for want of a better term, using that kit of parts. And obviously that's been quite successful. But as we keep saying, cost is the key thing.
Absolutely.
Chris is jumping up and down.
Go on, Chris.
In Rallycross, there's RX Lights.
Yep.
Which is basically 300 horsepower space frame car, and it can be made to look like anything. It's cheap to run, and I think rallying needs something like that, because any manufacturer could get on board with that, and, you know, it's just makes so much sense. It's so cheap to do.
Well, I agree, and Ryan's just had an email just to confirm that as well. I think that's what, you know, that's what's happened with this kind of AP4 thing and everything else, Chris, is that I suppose Orica do see it like that basically, you know, you've got this kit, you've got everything there, and all you need is basically a body shell to bolt it to. I think that's what the way they're looking at doing it. And dead air there was after that. There you go. Boys, are you still there?
We're still here, yes.
It all went very quiet then. Anyway, listen, Ryan Champion, as you're the leader of the pack over there, you're the wily old fox who's been playing on the frozen lakes and ice and everything for quite some time. I can remember you and me talking about taking these boys over 6 months ago. It would have been 6 months ago. So now you've spent a couple of days that I'm sure there's plenty you'd like to ask them for Absolute Rally.
Well, I guess the first thing is these two guys have been here a little bit longer than I have. They were here while M-Sport was testing, so they've witnessed the pre-Sweden test. We just talked about Sweden, so I'll come to Chris first. You saw Ogier testing. Firstly, he wiped out your GoPro, I think, but what struck you about watching Ogier testing?
He had a two-day test, and the first morning, the car didn't... It wasn't overly impressive, the traction, but then by the end of the second day, it was just out of this world. So it was non-stop, you know, flat-out testing, no breaks from when I was there. And he must be working really hard, but he definitely got the car to work, and it was a sight, you know, unbelievable sight to behold, really.
Now, Austin, you came out in time to see Elvin Evans testing. I mean, Elvin, obviously, somebody who you know very, very well from your part of the world. What did you make of seeing the 2017 car in action?
I mean, it was a big shock, really, because, you know, you've obviously experienced sort of the older WRC cars, and you kind of have to respect the next level of these new cars, and the only way you can kind of respect that is by viewing it yourself. And it kind of blew me away how much of a jump it really is. And obviously guys have told me what it's like, but to see it firsthand was a tremendous experience.
So we talked about it at the top of the show, obviously Sweden this weekend, we're in Sweden. Who's your tip for this weekend, and who do you think is going to take the victory?
I mean, if you're a betting guy, you'd go safe and go with Ogier, but I think Neville's going to be snapping at his heels, and maybe even Tanak. But it's going to be a tough one, but I'm sure Ogier will be somewhere near the top.
A slightly different question for you, Chris. I mean, obviously, it's great for us to have Chris Meek back in or to have a British driver with Chris Meek at the top. But we've got and I'll call him one of our own, even though Craig Green's obviously Irish. We still, you know, we've all sort of seen Craig compete on events around us, and Craig's obviously getting his chance in a full factory car. We've got Elvin in a frontline car. That's got to be good for the sport as we know it to help the likes of yourself progress.
Definitely, yeah, and I think he's got a great chance in Sweden as well. He's done it quite a few times, so the Citroen didn't quite show as much pace as the others in Monte Carlo, but maybe there'll be a dark horse and pull something out of the bag.
Now, obviously, one thing that you're experiencing here, we're driving on different lengths of studded tyres. I mean, Oisin, before coming here, I mean, had you had much experience on studded tyres? And obviously, you've seen the current car's testing. What do you make of, you know, the speed, the performance, the tyres, and how they work on the snow?
Yeah, having driven back in my early days, actually, we did a rally in Latvia back in 2010 on full studded tyres. It's kind of a strange experience, really, trying to find, you know, the limit, because it's, yeah, you can really push the car. And there's more grip than you've ever anticipated. But, yeah, obviously the likes of Elvin and guys like Seb and him just make it look so easy. And these new cars as well, they just, yeah, they tear it up and make it look effortless, to be honest.
Now, Chris, for people that haven't driven on studded tyres, how would you compare it, you know, from your experience? So, because people assume that because you're on ice, obviously you can't go very quickly. If it snows at home, the whole world stops and everybody crashes into each other. So, you know, you can obviously travel very, very quickly. How would you explain the level of grip that's actually available?
It's really difficult because it's such a unique experience, but you've got to drive very smooth because locking up, then it can all go wrong. And in the thick, powdery snow, there's no grip at all. But in the ice, it's in between gravel and tarmac grip-wise. It's hard to describe the sensation, but you can get an amazing feeling in that zone with those tyres, nice and smooth and like locking up. That's the only way you're going to get rid of the grip, really.
Now, just moving off topic a little bit, but you've had some pretty exciting news this week.
Yeah, awesome news. Opel want me back for another year, so it's so excited to do another year. You know, I've got loads of experience now of all the events, but that last year of the team, I was so close to winning the juniors. We won the two-wheel drive, but it's exactly what I need, really, because I don't need to rush to an R5. I learned so much with the team last year, so it just makes sense to do another year, and there's a big prize fund to aim for, so really looking forward to it.
And new teammates for this year?
Yeah, so the two German teammates from last year have both moved on. So I've got a Finnish guy called Jari Huttunen, who won the Opel Cup in Germany, who's really quick. He's backed by Marcus Gronholm, and an Italian girl called Tamara Molinaro, who's backed by Red Bull. So, two interesting characters in the team.
Now, with Opel Motorsport, I mean, for anybody who's on the circuit of Ireland, for example, they saw it's a very professional setup. How did you find it, and what did you learn from being with a factory setup like Opel?
The best way to describe it is it's a junior WRC team, really. They're just striving to win everything. They'll give you the best car. Nothing's done at, you know, half-assed, really. There's a full effort. They want you to win, and they're pushing to the limit with everything. It's done properly, and I had to adjust myself quite a lot because, you know, such a professional German outfit, and I'm just a young lad, really, so at first it was quite a lot to get used to, but it's definitely helped me improve over the full year, so can't wait for another chance.
Now, Oisin, you're still working hard on 2017, on your plans. Obviously, you have a prize, if you like, from the Drive DMAC Trophy last year. So tell us firstly about what's happening with your prize and what else you might be doing.
Yeah, one thing that's secured is that we have two WRC events lined up this year. We're unsure exactly what they'll be in an R5 car with Dima and M Sport. But we're sort of chipping away at it, so we have two rounds that don't clash with any series, and we can kind of have a busy year in R5, well, as busy as possible, to be honest, in R5 as we can, really, just to get the mileage. And when you make this next level, it's a different ball game. We just have to have seat time, and that's how it is. But yeah, as you say, we're sort of working on other things, trying to get some deals together. One thing is for sure that Hills Ford are backing me again for the second season, which is great news. They're very passionate about their rally, and very, very keen to get me back out there and support me the best they can. And yeah, through in conjunction with them, we've got Alfira Financial Services backing us again for another season off the back of a good run on Rally GB. So yeah, I mean, all the ingredients are there. We just kind of have to put it together now over the next couple of weeks, because time is ticking.
So we're hearing rumours of Keith Cronin driving a M Sport factory car effectively on the British Championship. How do you feel about that? And is that, I guess that's somebody you probably want to go head to head with and see how you could get on against him.
Yeah, it's good to have somebody as high profile as Keith signed up already. And obviously being backed by M Sport as well, that's going to be a real strong team. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of guys out there who would like to beat Keith and M Sport. So, as I say, our plans, we may go down the BRC route, we may not. It depends, really. But yeah, if we could have a sort of a chance of doing it properly, we'll give him a good go. And as I say, if it can be done properly, we'll be there.
Fantastic. Listen, boys, we could talk to you all night. We could listen to Chris eating his tea all night. And we could listen to Ryan drinking all night. But I've done that only about a week ago. Well, it was about a month ago, wasn't it? No, 6 weeks ago. And I don't want to go down that road again. Boys, you've got a delightful night with a very drunk Ryan Champion if he keeps drinking. I'm going to call time on this bit of the podcast now. So, Chris Ingram, congratulations on your news and good luck for this year. You're going to come back on and talk to us as the season goes on, aren't you?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tony. Looking forward to it.
Good, man. Osh, when you stop being cagey, are you going to tell us what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Once we find out, it's, as I say, it's a little bit sort of, it's there, but...
Yeah, no, I know. You don't want to tempt fate. I get it, mate. Honestly, I get it. I really do.
Before, and it's gone pear-shaped, so I'll keep my cards close for now and give you a bit of a surprise when we get
mate, we're all rooting for you. Ryan Champion, how long are you staying out in Sweden for?
Can I just point out, before you portray me as a drunken person who's in a gutter in Sweden, I think it's just to go to the fridge to open a beer tonight. Anyway,
I know. I'm sorry. I just know when we went to the Christmas ball together, granted with our partners as well, obviously, because we went to the Christmas ball and we did a fantastic, not together, but we sat next to one another and we drove over and everything else and we did the Christmas ball, which was lovely. But you did seem to siphon off a lot of the bottles of red wine that I bought.
Well, that was only because you weren't drinking them, so I didn't want them to go to waste.
Well, I wasn't drinking them because when every time I turn around, they're gone.
Well,
Snooze, you lose.
Yeah, but that's kind of ironic for a man from Liverpool to say, I turned round and they'd gone.
I see what you did there.
You should really.
That's just about as stereotypical as me saying, yeah, but a Yorkshireman didn't even get up off his backside to go to the bar and buy any because he's too tight-fisted. There you go. Boom.
Boom. Unfortunately, there is going to be some Scouse accents after the show's finished.
I'm sure there is. What you've got to ask yourselves is do I really care?
Well, we don't know. You seem to be getting quite upset about this whole subject. Maybe you do.
Anyway, I'm going to leave these boys to crack on and take the mick out of me. I'm going to wrap up this part of the podcast, and we're now going to cross over to Craig Drew, who again won the American Championship with David Higgins last year. He's talking about the opening round of the new championship over there, which is the American Rally Association Championship. And then we're going to have Zav McCartan talking about Galway and also previewing the first round of the Forestry Championship over in Ireland. And folks, thanks for the download. You know where we live, Absolute_Rally. Spread the love, spread the word. And thanks to Oshan, thanks to Chris. And right, thanks to you. Same time, same place next week.
I'll be here.
Good man. Look forward to it. And again, folks, thanks for the support. And yeah, enjoy the rest of the podcast.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally and welcome back to a friend of the show, a former teammate of mine and someone we've not had on since May last year, I've just realised, and I feel really, really bad for it. But since then, he's become an American champion again. Co-driver, of course, to David Higgins. Craig Drew, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I can't believe it's been since May, since I last spoke to you. But a lot's happened since then, but it's always a pleasure to catch up.
Good man, good man. Well, first and foremost, before we even talk about this year, we've got to congratulate you on yet another championship win.
Yeah, we had a good year last year. It was always going to be tough to follow up a perfect season, which we had in 2015, but last year went very well. We won four rallies. We retired from one and we finished second on one. But all in all, it was a very good year. And obviously, that's 6 out of 6 for me in America, 8 out of 8 for David. So we couldn't ask for much more.
Well, I wanted to talk to you because obviously this year, everyone was talking about the excitement this year. We had our crazy friend Crazy Leo on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about obviously the Canadian Championship. Now this, of course, was a shared round. This was also the opening round of the Canadian Championship and the new American Rally Association Championship. So I suppose for the uninitiated, this is a new event to you guys, certainly. The rest of the calendar seems a lot more familiar, it's fair to say. But new events, does that bring an added pressure, especially when you know you've got people like Antoine there, for instance, of course, who's a multiple Canadian champion?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time ever that there's been a national American rally and a Canadian one in the same event. So there's obviously a lot of talk amongst fans in Northern America about, you know, if the Canadian guys are faster or the American guys are faster. And I know Antoine's come down to America to rally a lot in the past, and people were saying, well, it'd be great if we could get the American teams to come up to Canada. So we finally got our chance to go up there in a proper championship scoring round. The buzz was really good before the event. And we had a great event. You know, it was a very, very tough rally, a rally we've never done before. So we were starting from a fresh sheet, had a very, very tough long day of recce-ing. I mean, the event was only a one-day event, but it was 140 stage miles, which is
wow.
Is massive in rallying at the moment. So there's a lot of work to do on the recce. And then the next day, obviously, we were starting at kind of 7 a.m. and finishing at about 10 p.m. So it was a very, very long, tough day, minus 22 degrees, I believe it was. So but yeah, it was great for American rallying in general, to be honest, to have the Canadian guys and the American guys going head to head. And obviously, it was great for us to come out on top in the end.
Now, you say obviously about that recce, you know, for most people, you know, 140 miles, stage miles, for instance, you know, that's like half a WRC round. That's, you know, yeah, the reality is that's the half a WRC round these days. So you guys get a two-pass recce, is that correct?
Yes, in Canada, you get a two-pass recce. Previously in America, on most events, we've had a one-pass recce, which obviously when we're making our own notes is not ideal, but it's something we've got used to doing. But with the new American Rally Association Championship as well, they've made it one of their priorities to make every round this year a two-pass recce. And I think they've even gone as far as on some events to not provide any organizer notes, just to try and encourage American crews to actually get out there and make their own notes. Obviously, if there's organizers notes provided, then that's people's kind of safety buffer and they don't necessarily make their own notes. So by sort of taking that option away, it's making everybody kind of go out there, start recceing properly, start making their own notes and hopefully just develop their notes and their driving as they go throughout the year.
I guess that, you know, as somebody who has used that safety buffer of using organizers' notes for pretty much most of my life, if truth be told, but for those guys who are looking to make a career, you know, whenever I have young drivers come to me, I always say the first thing you've got to do is go out and make notes. You know, don't mess about. I'm guessing this new association is trying to, I guess, create, you know, quick American drivers, because, you know, aside from, you know, we'll put Travis to one side for a second, and obviously the likes of Ken, you know, obviously David and you have dominated over the years, and I guess in their eye they want to see an American guy up there. That's probably what the pressure on you guys, they want an American guy at the forefront of all this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the general attitude in America with rallying and notes before is their notes have been a bit of a guide on a stage rather than absolutely what you trust and what you go off. So I don't think some crews have necessarily in the past used recce to its full potential and really understood what recceing is and how much it helps you on the event and how critical it is to your rally. So I think by taking away the option where they can just kind of cruise through stages on a recce and make maybe one or two amendments and kind of look at the scenery and whatever, now they really, really need to concentrate. And the feedback that I've got from a lot of people that I've spoken to since doing a couple of rallies where they don't have the Gemba notes that they had previously is that they really, really enjoy making their own notes, and it's brought about a whole new kind of professionalism to each crew, which can only be a good thing. Also, I think sometimes the Gemba notes are almost a little bit of a different system to what people generally would make worldwide when they're making their own notes. So I think sometimes that could be a little bit of a limiting factor if people just grow up using Gemba notes. If they then go and try to do rallying outside of America or Canada, they can somewhat be held back a little bit. So as far as we're concerned, you know, making people make their own notes can only be a good thing for the championship.
I think it adds another layer as well to the event. You know, we can all get sucked in, and I guess the guys do over there as well. You know, you turn up, you use the Gemma notes, job done, get in the car, you do the rally. The other layer of got this. I actually really enjoy recceing, and I know how hard it is to recce, and you know better than me, but I actually think it's all part of the journey. It's actually part of doing the event. You're doing the event properly. And, I think for the American crews and obviously, you know, the Canadian crews, well, I think it's really, really important. But anyway, we will push on. I want to talk to you, obviously, about where the competition comes from. There's a very obvious place where the competition is coming from for you guys this year. You have got Travis back full time for the whole year. Are we comfortable having a full time teammate again?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'd. It's great to have him back. It's great to have him back and have him back on a good pace, which he's shown over the last couple of years. I mean, David and I have been very dominant in America. Obviously, for us, that's great. We've enjoyed it, but the truth be told, we'd love to have another 10 cars on our pace that we're battling with every time. So it hasn't happened yet in terms of getting the other big names back to the championship, but at least by having Travis there on every round, we're guaranteed at least one very tough competitor. So definitely great to have him back. We, the four of us, David, myself, Travis and Robbie, get on very, very well. So it's really good to have those guys around on every round this year.
I was going to say, well, to be fair, Travis is the odd one out there because Robbie's from Oxford.
Yeah.
You're
it's a British takeover.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah, it's a very British America, Super America rally team, really, isn't it? But I know from when we had Antoine on last year, and he was mega keen to go up against you guys, and he was also mega keen to point out, obviously, his car's very different to your car as well, but by the same token, he wants, that's where he wants to be. But obviously the politics of Subaru America, Subaru Canada, and you know, basically having their own agendas was kind of a bit like you guys. He wants more people on his pace over that side as well, so that's why, you know, such a shame really he had the issues he had. I think on that particular ride, it would have been great if you all had a clean run. I don't think it would have changed the results so much, but I think it just would have been what we were all waiting for, you know, people who follow the American and Canadian rally series.
Yeah, it was a massive shame. He was on a very good pace from the start of Pierre-Neige. The first loop of stages, the spectator stages, which are kind of used, you know, a lot every year. So obviously his experience paid to there, but he was on a very good pace, and it's a shame that he had the issues he had. I mean, we had a, a steady start with some issues with our car, setup. There was a breakdown in communication, should we say. But after we got to service and got that sorted, we really found our sort of groove in the forest stages. Very tough stages, very slippery, very long stages. Actually, there was three stages over 25 kilometers each, so tough stages, especially with no studs. This year we were allowed road legal studs, but the length of those are only kind of three and a half millimeters, so the difference they make over a non-studded tire is not huge. But it was it turned out to be a very good rally for us. We got into a good rhythm, and but yeah, obviously it'd be nice to see Antoine back maybe on some American events this year. I know the team is based out west in Canada, and it's not that far from Oregon Trail and Olympus, so it'd be great if we saw him come down and add another car into the battle.
Happy days. Well, next round for you guys now is, it's a familiar rally for you guys as well now, isn't it? Because this is where we jump back to rounds of what was Rally America that have now come over to this new championship. So familiar territory for you guys on the next round?
Yeah, we're going back out to Oregon Trail. We actually have 9 weeks off now, so it's a big break between the first round and the second. But Oregon Trail has always been very, very kind to us. We've won it 6 years out of six attempts, so obviously we'll be hoping to keep our 100% record up. There's some new rules for us to abide by for Oregon as well. They've actually, for cars in the speed factor, they call it in America, we now have to run a much heavier car with a smaller restrictor, a different type of turbo, and we're only allowed 10 tyres, which is going to be very tough on events that are kind of 120 stage miles plus. Wow. Something else for us to, that's another challenge thrown in by the organisers. So, you know, we're looking forward to trying to make the most out of that and see what sort of difference that makes for our car compared to others.
Is that just on our Oregon Trail this year, or is that on all the rounds?
No, that's for all the rallies. Essentially, they're trying to increase the competition between us and other cars, or in other words, kind of bring the other cars closer to us. So by running things 300 extra pounds in the car, a smaller restrictor, a different type of turbo, and 10 tyres is certainly going to slow us down somewhat. They're predicting anything up to sort of 5 minutes per event. So it's going to be interesting to see who else comes along now and see if we can fend those guys off.
Wow. I'm guessing hard compound tyres for a lot of the events here forward. Now, I'm just going to guess at that.
I think it's going to have to be. It's going to be tough, you know, because hard compound tyres obviously, as a general rule, last longer, but on sort of short stages, which sometimes America has a mix of, you know, you can have up to a 20-mile stage, but you can also have a lot of 4 or 5-mile stages. Very difficult to get any kind of temperature in the tyres, especially events like Oregon and Olympus can be prone to having really inconsistent weather, and you can suddenly have a storm, you can suddenly have really heavy rainfall, even snowfall, which we've seen in the past. So doing all this on just 10 tyres is going to be a really, really tough challenge. But you know, I guess it adds in a bit of sort of, you know, tactics to the event, and it makes you kind of think outside the box a little bit. So, you know, we welcome them, get on with it, and see how the year progresses.
Good man, good man. Well, 9 weeks is a hell of a long time. What's Craig Drew going to do for 9 weeks?
Well, I'm going out to Dirtfish Rally School in America to teach a 2-day co-driver course out there, which I did last year, which was a lot of fun, and it was sold out last year, so hopefully more of the same this year. Basically like a day one beginners, day two advanced, which includes co-drivers actually going in STI rally cars with drivers and reading notes and doing recces, and kind of like a practical element to a co-driver course. Okay. So looking forward to that, and just plenty of mountain biking, spending time with the family, and, you know, making the most of the time off before a very busy summer again.
Good man, good man. Well, listen, I'm sure David will be doing something similar now that the rally school isn't keeping him busy. And he's normally out on the bike or out with the kids with the go-karts, I've noticed, down with GYG Karting, which is a fantastic karting place, by the way. I love that place. And I always love it when he puts pictures up there, because it takes me back to Jamie Edwards' stag do. Which is a place where we shouldn't go on a rally podcast. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, yeah. We'll leave that till after.
There you go. Well, listen, Craig, thank you so much for joining us, mate. I really, really do appreciate it. And we will, I promise you, let's get you back a hell of a lot sooner, and we'll have a proper catch-up again soon, okay?
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And whenever you give me a shout, I'm always more than happy to have a chat.
Good man, Craig Drew. Congratulations again on you were on the opening round of the American Rally Association. I have to make sure I get that right with Subaru American, of course, with alongside David Higgins. And we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thank you very much.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's the final section, and as promised last week, we said we were going to get Zav back, and we're going to all things Irish in the final section, because Galway looked mega. I was following it online, as we said. I hope you guys were watching it last week as well, or rather listening to it last week and keeping up to date on social media and everything else. But Zav, welcome back this week.
Yeah, good to be back.
Good to be back. Now, I made reference even last week of talking about, you know, the old dogs, you know, the old dogged Subarus and everything else. Gary Jennings only went and put it. This is where it gets confusing. He won the event, but he didn't take maximum points, of course, because it's an R5 category now for the Irish Tarmac series. But he did win the event overall with Roy White second in a Fiesta World Cup.
Yeah, he did. I mean, Gary was a very popular winner. And I suppose if you were playing out the results, you kind of got it as you would have wanted. In that, you know, Gary with Rory Kennedy on board won the event, won it quite easily, in fairness. As you say, the championship overall, the Clonakilty Black Pudding Tarmac Championship, is for R5 cars only. Now, second place, Roy White with James O'Brien on board. They're concentrating on the Irish National Championship, which kicks off in a couple of weeks' time. But Galway was a good test for them. Roy, who's driven several tasty cars over the years, and the very venerable James O'Brien. Top points score last weekend was a good name, a very popular name in Irish rally, and Alistair Fisher with Gordon Noble on board. Alistair would have taken top points in the Clonakilty Black Pudding Championship. And as you said, it was a very good event. Sam Moffat with Carl Atkinson were fourth. And good result too for Robert Barrable with Damien Connolly. We mentioned Robert been back, although he's kept his sort of hand in terms of competing. It was in circuit racing here in the UK last year. So Robert dialed back in very well, and he's going to head to West Cork and hopefully put a budget together. But on the whole, a great event. And as we said last week, you know, coverage from Galway Bay FM. There was a few of the stages were streamed live. Down to do the event was Sean Hassett. Sean was due to co-drive for Ed Toomey. Now, Ed's family business is actually Clonakilty Black Pudding. But we'll mention Ed and Sean later, because they're down to do the Willie Lockman this weekend.
Can I ask you, are you on free Black Pudding this week?
No, not at all.
Because you've managed to get it in now four times, and I can only assume it's the way Ryan and the way Jack in the past and one or two others have managed to get free biscuits from that company up in the very, very north of Scotland. They keep repeating the name, and eventually free stuff turns up. It's amazing.
It's funny you pick up on that, because if you go to any tarmac round, Ed's mum Colette and some of the people that help her out, you will get free sausages and black pudding. They cook it at every event.
Wow.
It is, if you can imagine going to a rally where it's chilly cold and maybe raining and you wander through the service area, you can literally follow your nose to where there'll be some sausages and black pudding and all the other, and quite a lot of people avail of that little facility, I must admit.
I don't blame him, I would as well. Sorry, mate, I rudely interrupted then. Go on, crack on.
No, it was in good flow and I completely forgot where I was. But it was a good event. I mean, the only thing that happened untoward, if you like, was on the Sunday morning, where they did have to cancel two stages. And that was purely on the grounds of safety. That was ice. Stages 10 and 11, there were patches of very treacherous ice early in the morning. The sun then came out, and they managed to rattle off the rest of the stages in the day. I mean, Joe McGonigal, we mentioned there, up as far as Robert Barrable. Stephen Wright, good to see Stephen get a very good result. Stephen, you know, had a few problems towards the end of the last year. You know, we mentioned him on the Ulster. He had a good run, late entry, good run to sixth. Josh Moffat wouldn't have been overly confident, I think, in the conditions on the Saturday, and admitted that he had dropped time, but, you know, clawed back to finish seventh. Joe McGonigal, Kieran Gainey in the R5, Fabia. Joe has dialed in very well to that, and that would be a very good result for him. And Stephen McCann then, obviously, in the S2000 Fiesta, good run into ninth with Brenton Comiskey, who has recovered. There was footage of where he clipped a bridge on the, if you like, the co-driver side of the car that just launched him into the bank, and he was very lucky to not roll, but lost a bit of time. But it would have been a good run for Brendan.
I was going to say, I don't think he's done much in that car, has he? Whether that's the first event, or certainly he may have only done one event before in that Skoda, because obviously he had the Fiesta for a while, I know that. And that got moved on, I think, towards the end of last year. So I don't think he's done much in that. So
I think it was his first event.
Yeah, I'm sure someone will put it straight. By all means, you know where to find us. Sure. Absolute _ rally on Twitter. Put it straight on that. Now, moving forward this weekend.
I do want to mention the national category, because
yeah, of course,
there was great battles all the way through there, Tony. That went to Gary Kiernan with Keith Moriarty in the Escort. Now, Gary recovered from 25 seconds road penalty. Ryan Loughlin had led but crashed on the second stage. And Tom Flaherty was hoping to do well, but you know, he didn't. But there were some very good results there. Third was Kevin Eaves and William Lynch. Fourth, Patrick McHugh. And Eugene Megan, who did very well in the championship last year, was in fifth. And, of course, we had the M3 and a few other classic cars out on Galway. Officials did very well. Temperamental weather. We move on to West Cork in a few weeks' time.
Okay, no, I look forward to that. As I say, we are going to follow a little bit more this year. But coming up is obviously this weekend over here. We've got the BTRDA opening round, which is the Cambrian Rally, which should be talked about at the top of the programme. But it's also the opening round of the Forestry, I think, over there as well.
Yeah, it's the first round of the Irish Forestry Championship, the Valvoline-sponsored series, the Willie Loughman Forest Rally. Now, it's the longest-running forest rally in Ireland, way back from 1956, I think it was. But over the years, I mean, Ireland is known for its tarmac rallying. We wouldn't exactly have the best forests in the world, but the organisers behind the series have worked extremely hard to put together a really, really competitive championship. And you do have one in the north, you have one in the south, but they open around this weekend, six stages in the Suir Valley. The morning stages, the two stages in the morning run twice. I think it's about 80 kilometre stage mile overall. But a really super entry, Tony.
I was just about to say, you know, blast from the past, you know, straight away. I think this is a seeded entry list I'm looking at. Kenny McKinstry?
No, Kenny is up. That's the Pace Notes Rally magazine.
We'll come to that one in a second. Apologies. No. We'll come back to that one in a second. Yeah. Sorry. I've clicked ahead of myself there. Apologies.
Number one seed here is Keith Cronin with Mikey Galvin. Now, a lot of talk. Jack has covered the possibilities that this is maybe a precursor to a BRC tilt this year, but organisers, a big scoop for them, Keith running a Ford Fiesta R5. So there will be a lot of excitement. Keith, we know, multiple British champion. First event this year for him. I think there were people hoping to be out in Galway, but I think he's late putting a deal together. But Keith will go well. Marty McCormick with Dave Moynihan. They're out for the first run in the Skoda Fabia R5. And again, they're having a tilt at the BRC. David from Cork himself there with the Ears Ireland, the tyre people that run Kumo, very successful Galway event for them. But you have the likes of Josh Moffat out again. Mick O'Brien over from England, the Luton-based plant businessman. Mick's over in the Ford Fiesta World Rally car. And then there's a plethora of really, really quick men there. Niall McCullough, Pat O'Connell, Adrian Hetherington, wheels at the Corolla World Rally Car. But we have a if you like, an interloper from Scotland, Sean Sinclair with a mate of yours, Jamie Edwards.
Yeah.
Jamie was over.
Now, there's a bit of a story to that car. It's going to be a very busy car this weekend, because Tom Cave's using it on the Saturday on the Cambrian Rally. and then it makes its way home overnight, and providing Tom doesn't do anything silly with it, which I'm sure he won't, very capable driver as our Tom, then the guys are going to be out on the Sunday, so no pressure.
Yeah, I was talking to, my connection with McKinstry's go back a long way. I was talking to Sean during the week, and Sean was highly, excited at the thought of heading away Thursday night and off to the Cambrian, and then back up the road to get the boat across and into Dublin, and away like hell from Dublin down to the forestry. A busy weekend for them. And then, of course, you mentioned Kenny at the start here. He's out on Saturday. So all in all, a busy weekend. Kenny's concerned, running a couple of cars on Saturday at the Paisnose Rally Magazine event at Carcassonne. But the likes of Johnny Leonard, Johnny had dabbled a couple of years back. He's out with Niall Burns. Liam Regan, Enda McCormick and Patsy Keenan are making their way over from America for this. So to go back to what was said at the top of the programme, the forestry is really, really good. And it's a championship that's becoming more and more popular. We better not forget the likes of Shane McGurr, Marty McGarty, and the two-wheel drive Starlet Shane, who had come over and done a couple of BTRDA rounds even last year, and a couple of other forestry rounds. He's very quick. Mickey Conlon with Kieran McPhillips, another quick pairing, and then the likes of David Condell, David Cross, and Damien McGurran from Fermanagh. A lot of quick people will be down in the forest. Clark, of the course there, Barry Duggan has put together six compact stages. Scrutiny's at 3 o'clock at the Ayrburg Showgrounds at Piltown for anyone that's listening. Once we get down Saturday afternoon, the launch of the series is there as well. First car away Sunday morning, somewhere about 8 o'clock, and the first car is due back to the service area there at Piltown, about 10 to 5.
Fantastic. And obviously, if you are out watching it and you listen to the podcast on your way out there, whatever, some people did send us some images from Galway, which is great. Really, really appreciate it. Yeah. Which is, no, it's not. It's exactly what we want, because we know a lot of people now are listening to the podcast when they are going to events and stuff like that. So it does kind of make a bit of a difference as well, especially if we're not there. And we've got, we do have people from all over the world that listen to the program, and we do introduce quite a few people to rallying that perhaps they didn't even know existed. So keep spreading the love, keep sharing these images when you're out on events. We really, really appreciate it. And if you guys are listening this weekend, by all means, get some stuff in. We'll get regurgitated, retweeted, and everything else, and we'll introduce the world to whatever event you're watching anyway. So Zav, I think that's it. That's our roundup for this week.
No, you're shooting off of me now. You're shooting off. We're gonna give a quick mention to the McGrady Championship, because the McGrady Insurance Northern Ireland Championship, because its entry list is like a who's who. I'll quickly run through it. It's the opening round of the Northern Ireland Rally Championship. Seeded number one, Kenny McKinstry, that you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Derek McGarty is back out. He won the New Year Stages Rally. He's going to be out in his Ford Fiesta. Colin McCluskey, who was at one stage the youngest ever Northern Ireland champion, is at number three. Both him and Derek were out in the cars a couple of weeks back at another event, and he's got a bit more of a feel for the car. Johnny Greer is out in the Citroen DS3R5, Brian Crawford sitting alongside him. Petter Herson is out in their Fiesta World Rally Cup first time, and Damien Conley, who's in Galway last week under the Robert Barrable, a long-time co-driver for Petter. But you also have the likes of Alan Carmichael in one of the McGeehan, I think it is, Mini Countryman World Rally Cars. I think Alan's going to have a really full title goal this year at the whole of the Northern Ireland Championship. He wants to give Mr. McGarty a run for his money. And a guy you might remember here, does the name Robin Phillips mean anything to you? This is where I turn the tables. You like tell us about you rallying your little Volkswagen Polo.
Yeah. If it's who I think it, and I'm purely just going completely left field here, there was a polo over in Ireland when I did the polo challenge, which is nearly 16 years ago now, 16. By the way. 16 years ago. 2001. No, 2001, 2002, 2003, I was with the polos, and we were with Volkswagen UK. And there was whenever we went over to Ulster, there was an Irish polo. And if that's where you're going with this, then I wouldn't have put two and two together, only the fact that you mentioned the polos.
No, I think this could have been a Ryan Champion question. If my memory's correct, and people, when they listen to the podcast, they're telling me yes, you were, or no, you weren't. I have a funny feeling. In fact, I'm fairly certain. Robin Phillips was one of the regional winners of the Volkswagen Golf GTI. Wow. Remember when Chris Lord drove one, and there was a couple of other people, and there would be a question on the podcast.
That's a long lot. Way before my, that was Volkswagen Motorsport days. Yes. We've gone full circle. We're on Volkswagen racing, and we've gone back to Volkswagen Motorsport.
Well,
now.
Robin was I think the Northern Ireland representative, and he did a couple of BRC rounds as well. But that's quite a long. But good to see Robin out. He's out an Essiat Subaru, and one of the people that you mentioned regularly for free. Kieran Graffin's out in the DS3R5, and Greg McCormick's also out in a Skoda Fabia. Camillus Bradley's out in the Mark II Escort. The long-time, well-known rally name, Desi McCartney, it'll be out in the Darien T90. And it gets underway on Saturday morning, 9:30, six stages, and should be finished about 4 o'clock. And again, it's at Kirkeston Circuit, so if you're going for the day, and you get Marshall, there are details if you want to help out. And Marshall, details are on the event website.
Fantastic. I think we've covered it now. I think I was a bit previous there, but I think we've covered everything that's going on this weekend over on the sunny islands.
It gets busy now with us for the rest of the year. January's normally a quiet, but we have those sort of three events. You mentioned the Cambrian there, for example. The Burr and the first round of the National Championship kicks off in a couple of weeks, and there's another first round in Tipperary starting next month. We then have Ballina, the Malcolm Wilson stages. So next few weeks, it's ramping up, as they say.
It's all go. Folks, we do appreciate the download. Dad, thanks for joining us this week. We'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah,
okay?
My pleasure. Be good and be safe.
And absolutely, couldn't have put it better myself. Folks, you know where we live. It's facebook.com/absoluterally. And you can find us on Twitter, @absolute_rally. And show a little bit of love as well to our show sponsor, Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Of course, getting involved, sponsoring this podcast, sponsoring Rally over in Ireland as well. So keep that love going. And again, really do appreciate the download. We'll be back same time, same place next week.